my father set me on this bicycle and pushed me down this hill, and everything was going great. You know, I was balancing, I didn't need training wheels, but we hadn't discussed braking or turning. And there was a school right there that I went right into the wall.
Well, hey, look, it's you. How awesome is that? Welcome back, gang. So good to have you here. This is episode number 135 of Future Proof. I'm Bill Sheridan. Thanks for being here. Let's start with some deep cleansing breaths, shall we? Everyone breathe in. Now breathe out. Now breathe in. And now out. Feels good. Feels good, huh? Very relaxing, very peaceful, very zen. That's the goal anyway. I got a new Apple Watch a couple months ago. This thing's got a breathe app on it, right? Every hour or so it buzzes to remind you to stop whatever you're doing and breathe, right? Breathe, damn it. The watch buzzes at you. It's supposed to be very relaxing, but they come at you like it's, you know, one more thing you got to do, right? Oh my God, I got to breathe. I got to breathe to calm myself down from the jolt of adrenaline I just got from that watch buzzing on my wrist. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe it'll help, right? Who knows? We'll see, right? I guess we're all going to eventually see as time goes on. Hey, here's something. This week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute. That's relaxing, right? Which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So what are we talking about today? How about energy? How many of you could use a little more energy these days? I mean, show of hands, right? How many of you are just sick and tired of your homes, of staying at home? How many of you have officially hit the COVID wall? Okay, and how many of you hit that wall about 6 months ago or longer? You're not alone. That's the thing, right? This is a real thing. It's hard to maintain some semblance of balance in your life when you're stuck doing the same things in the same places all of the freaking time, right? For days, weeks, months, now more than a year on end. It's an energy suck, right? It's draining physically, emotionally. It's hard to find and keep any kind of emotional and energy balance in this type of environment. There's a professor at the University of Toronto by the name of Aisha Ahmad. And we'll talk a little bit more about her in just a few minutes. But she does a lot of work across geographies and cultures in the area of long-term crises and how we manage our way through them. You know, a lot of her work is centered in hostile environments and war zones. But what we're going through right now, this pandemic, it's similar in a lot of ways in terms of the things that she's seen and the impact that these things have on us at an individual level. And she says hitting this type of wall during a crisis like this, it's not only normal, it's almost a law, right? It almost always happens. And here's what she says. She was interviewed for an article in Forbes back in September. So she's referencing the coming winter part of this interview as being the season that we are now just coming out of, right? But her words apply nonetheless. Here's what she says. She says, quote, our crisis is global and there is nowhere to run. And that's okay. I've had to power through that hump before. And there is life on the other side. We've already relearned how to do groceries, host meetings, and even teach classes, and we have found new ways to be happy and have fun. This is my first pandemic, she says, but not my first wall. So what can I share to help you? First, the wall is real and normal, and frankly, it's not productive to try to ram your head through it. It will break naturally if you ride it out. Of course, there are things we have to do, work, teach, cook, exercise, but just don't expect to be sparklingly happy or wildly creative in the middle of your wall. Right now, if you can meet your obligations and be kind to your loved ones, you get an A+. In other words, this is normal. It's okay to not be okay, right? And this too shall pass. You know, I had the privilege a few years back to hear Benjamin Zander speak. He's a conductor, currently the musical director for the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra. But his talk had to do with leadership and resilience. And he said what separates the superstars from the rest of us. And by the way, here I have to insert a warning that there's some language coming up that might not be suitable for sensitive ears, right? But Benjamin Zander says what superstars do is that they are able to get beyond the fuck it, right? Now, the fuck it, it's that wall that we all hit from time to time. It's that place where we just ordinarily quit, right? Toss up our hands in the air and just give up. And everybody hits that wall, that place, pretty much every day. And our work, our best work, gets done when we can break through that wall and go beyond it. That was his point. And it's not easy to do, right? Complacency, apathy, those are powerful things. Going beyond that wall requires resilience and passion and really kind of an iron grip on our why, right? The reason that drives us to do what we do. But those of us, those who get there, they do more than just great work. They inspire others to do great work too, right? I mean, what do you do when the people you work with go beyond their breaking points and do really awesome stuff? I'll bet my next paycheck that what you do is you try to do the same thing. Right? Great effort is almost contagious. The harder you work, the harder those around you work. Great stuff gets done beyond that wall, right? So those are our lessons today. If you hit that wall, you're normal. And if you can get beyond it, great things await. So now all we need are some strategies to get beyond it. And here to provide those is my guest this week. He is Greg Condoracci. Greg is a senior fellow with the Business Learning Institute. He's a consultant and a faculty member at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He's researched and written extensively about personal energy's impact on careers and organizations. So in my mind, he's the perfect guy to talk to this week. And Greg and I sat down recently and talked about all this stuff, right? The different types of energies that are at play in an environment like this, the signs that we might be about to hit that wall, and the strategies for bringing a little bit of balance back into our lives. Really, really important stuff this week from a guy we all should be listening to right now. Here is my conversation with Greg Condoracci. So, Greg, I thought I'd start with this. This is something that my boss, Jackie Brown, shared with us a few months ago. It's from, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Dr. Aisha Ahmad. She's from the University of Toronto. So she's a scholar of terrorism, of all things. And she's done a lot of research into like long-term assignments into hostile environments. And all this was said kind of in the context of helping us understand the drain on our energy that's happening as a result of this pandemic. And how we can take a little bit better care of ourselves. But this was, and this again was done, I think this was a presentation she gave back in, it was about 6 months ago or so. I think maybe 6-7 months into the pandemic. But anyway, at that time she said, quote, "The 6-month mark in any sustained crisis is always difficult. We have all adjusted to this new normal, but might now feel like we're running out of steam. Yet at best, we are only 1/3 of the way through this marathon." So I'm just kind of curious. That, I mean, that kind of came to mind as I was thinking about what we were going to be talking about today. So I'm kind of curious, what comes to mind for you when you hear something like that?
Well, what comes to mind for me is a story out of my life. And as you know, Bill, I'm an ultra distance bicycle rider. Uh-huh. And what I always joke about is how life imitates ultra distance bicycle riding.
Oh, no kidding.
And, you know, I mean, it's just the way life tends to be. Yeah. A long time, a lot of work, and sometimes a pain you know where. Okay. So I was having a discussion with some friends the other day. We were talking about hitting the wall. You know, it's like, and I think kind of that's what she had in mind when she said, you know, 6 months, like we're only a third of the way, and there's a long way yet to go, and it's really hard. And I remember a few years ago, I was on a ride slash race in Alaska. Now, the race went from Valdez to Anchorage via Fairbanks. Okay. That's not a straight line, no. But you can't get lost in Alaska. There's only one road. So Fairbanks is halfway through this race, which was 750 miles long over the course of a little more than 3 days. So I remember I got to Fairbanks, and I was really tired. Okay. And I did the normal thing that I do when I'm really tired, which is like got a Coca-Cola or something like that. Didn't work. And the guys I was riding with, you know, kind of waved goodbye, rolled all over the horizon. And I was there all alone. I mean, I was in the middle of Alaska. I had hundreds of miles to ride. I had no energy. I didn't know anybody. And, you know, I really felt all alone, which I think is probably not all that familiar, the loneliness part. Anybody else who's been going through, we've been going through. And, you know, I just, you know, I just thought to myself, what am I going to do? You know, and I could tell right away that thinking about how tired I was probably not a good strategy.
Right.
So for emergency purposes, I carry a little iPod with, you know, some of my favorite rock and roll stars. In this case, it was Mick Jagger, Michael Jackson, and all that kind of stuff. I turn that on, put the pod in the ear, and went rolling down the road. And, you know, pretty soon, I got to forget about how tired I was. Yeah. And I started getting into the music, and I started thinking about what was going on, you know, on there. And I forgot about all the other stuff. And when I caught up to the guys who had left me earlier, they turned to me and said, whatever it is that you just took, we want some of that. And I said, well, I didn't take anything. You know, maybe Michael Jackson. I didn't take anything. You know, it demonstrates you how difficult the long run, the marathon is for everybody. You know, in marathons, we talk forever about what it's like hit mile 15 or mile 20. Yeah. When you still have a long way to go and you're not feeling like you want to do it. And I think that's kind of where we are right now in many ways. Yeah. And the underappreciated impact of what we're all going through is the non-physical part.
Right,
you
know? Right.
I mean, the physical part is very clear. You could get sick. You could get very sick. You could die. Right. Right? The non-physical part, which takes, I think, a huge toll on everybody, whether you got the bug or not, is what I think is worth talking about, because, you know, the quote you just read
it's
directly to that.
I've felt it, and I know I'm sure I'm not alone. It's you know, the day is over and you just feel mentally spent, you know? I mean, and I think a lot of us are going through that. And it's like you didn't really do much, but there's a whole lot of mental energy that's being expended when you're just sitting home alone trying to connect with people through a screen, and it's sapping, you know?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, people joke to me about, I say, well, how, you know, you're an old fart. How could you ride so far on your bike? And I say, you know, the answer is simple. It's 10% fuel economy and 90% mental. Mm-hmm. That's what's really going on right now. I mean, we can all kind of make it through the day physically.
Right.
Making it through the day mentally is a whole different story.
Sure.
And, you know, as you know from our previous conversations, I like to think about energy using the acronym PIES, P-I-E-S, you know, physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual.
Okay.
And so I would always tell people the physical is almost irrelevant, even though it's serious from the standpoint we were talking about, but that's really not what it's going to take to get through this.
Right, right.
You know,
a combination of a bunch of
healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this I think ties right into what we were talking to, but I've heard more than a few times from more than a few people that our ability to kind of keep ourselves in alignment or in balance, you know, our self-control or our willpower, it's all finite, right? I've heard it said that we only have a certain amount of this that'll help us get through the day. And when we run out, it's not going to get pretty, right? It's going to be pretty ugly. And I've heard this said kind of in the context of young children, how like at the end of the day, they tend to hit a wall and can't kind of bring themselves back, right? Right. And I'm curious, do you think that's, is that a real thing? I mean, in what you've experienced, is that something that we normally go through?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real thing. And I think the idea of young children is a good one. I remember the first time I got on a bicycle, my father set me on this bicycle and pushed me down this hill, and everything was going great. You know, I was balancing, I didn't need training wheels, but we hadn't discussed braking or turning. and there was a school right there that I went right into the wall. But the idea then is, you know, you can stop, you can change direction, you don't have to go into the wall. And I think for a lot of us today, one of the reasons we go into the wall is because we forget that we have some choices here. We don't have to spend the whole day looking at email and the latest, you know, message from social media and listening to CNN all day. Those are enormous energy sinks. Oh, gosh. I mean, they're just sucking the juice right out of us. You know, several months ago, I was listening to a presentation by Arthur Brooks, who is professor at Harvard, and his specialty is happiness. You know, and he said, what we're trying to do with COVID, they said, is we're trying to turn uncertainty into risk. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We can live with risk. All right. If you get up in the morning and drive to the grocery store, the risk that you're going to have a flat tire or get run over by, you know, a truck or something is very small. So you can live with that, right? But COVID, you can't live with, because you don't know, you know, and uncertainty makes us crazy, all right? And so we have this thing where what we do is we got to know what's going on. Which vaccine is it? Should I get Pfizer or should I wait for Johnson & Johnson? And, you know, I don't know. And I can't get in and I can't get on. And, you know, and everything about this pandemic is designed to suck away your energy. Mm-hmm. Right, including and especially getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and trying to get an appointment for your shot.
Which I think a lot of us are working on right now.
It's terrible. Yeah, of course. You know, I am too. Can I get through? No. All right. So it's like waiting online to try to get Rolling Stones tickets for the concert that's sold out, and it's sold out every day. You go every day and it's sold out every day. Stand light again tomorrow, you know, and all of those things. If you understand that game and what it's doing to your head, you think, whoa, I really have to think about what I'm thinking about.
Right.
And that's really the key to getting through this and getting through this balanced.
So I want to talk about some of those strategies here in just a second. I'm kind of curious, what signs should we be looking for or cognizant of that might help us know that we're in trouble or out of balance or headed in that direction?
Well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, on a bicycle, you know right away when you're on a bicycle.
That one's easy.
But in real life, you don't want to wait for the crash.
Right.
Okay. When you feel like you're weaving a little bit, it might be time to get off the bike, you know? And so the obvious ones are, you know, just in general, low energy, just low physical, mental, spiritual. I don't feel like anything. I don't feel like talking to anybody. And the problem with that, of course, is that it makes it worse. I mean, there was a recent article in Harvard Magazine that said, you know, I mean, when you're really feeling down and you're really feeling lonely, the last thing you want to do is pick up the phone and call somebody, right? But that's exactly what you ought to be doing, or setting up that Zoom call, or, you know, because every one of those things gives you energy. When you're feeling like you're tired and, you know, call somebody else who's tired. And just because you're helping them, you get juice from doing that.
Right.
You know, so, you know, again, the list is like, you know, fatigue, energy, listlessness, the inability to kind of get out of bed in the morning, or, you know, either too much sleep or not enough sleep.
Right.
All of those things, you know. And then, of course, drug, alcohol abuse, all that other kind of stuff.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So, you know, and again, you know, those all turn out to be counterproductive in the long run, because the truth is we need bad feelings. We need to feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, you can learn a lot.
Well, it's true. I mean, a lot of us, you know, an awful lot of us, judging from stuff I'm seeing, you know, in my social channels and all that, but a lot of us kind of tend to go straight to the negative, right? And things like, you know, I mean, you made a point about drinking a couple of minutes ago. And I see people making jokes all the time on how much I'm drinking during the pandemic. And, you know, it's not, you know, it gets to the point where it stops being funny after a while, you know, it's crazy. Well, so you kind of alluded to some strategies that we can kind of employ to help bring a little bit of balance back to our lives. What are some of those? I mean, what would you suggest when we start noticing those signs? You mentioned, you know, calling up somebody and kind of sharing what you're feeling with them and what they're feeling with you. But what are some other strategies that we can use to bring a little bit more balance back to our lives?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, again, I play with the PIES, you know, so physically, there are a bunch of good strategies that we ought to be doing. You know, we ought to be getting a decent amount of sleep. We ought to be getting the other vaccines that we can get more readily, like, you know, pneumonia and flu and those type of things. You know, a good positive set of routines, physical routines help. Sunlight helps. I know it's hard because this isn't the sunniest time of the year, but getting out, walking makes a big difference. Exercise. A lot of people are kind of stymied because they can't get or they don't want to go to the gym, but you know, you can do push-ups at home. You can, you know, when I'm really feeling down, I go for a bike ride, and I'm fortunate that, you know, my particular hobby happens to be one that's pretty COVID-free. You know?
Right.
So the physical stuff is kind of there. I mean, you want to take basic good physical care of yourself, you know, and you don't want to do some of the other stuff that you've been talking about, because that becomes counterproductive in the long run.
Right.
Intellectually, you know, it's like, okay, what am I thinking about? Right. And as you said, the default is, oh, I'm going to die. you know, I mean, the default is to watch CNN all day long. The default is to spend a lot of time on social media trying to figure out.
Right.
You know, the default is to read every headline that you get an email from, in my case, the New York Times and the Washington Post, read down in the stories. And, you know, and so part of it is, what are you putting in there? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not, you ought to know some of what's going on, but if you're intellectually sort of all tied up in, you know, in the news, well, you know what? Usually, I'm an old newspaper reporter. So we used to have this thing, it's, you know, bad news is good news. I mean, you know, that's what fills the newspapers, that the radio and everything else. So intellectually, it's like, what are you putting in there? You may decide, you know, I think I'll just take a couple days off from talk radio and the TV news and CNN and looking at all that stuff. Yeah. And you're not going to miss much.
Right.
You know, but that, so from an intellectual standpoint, I think that's pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. From an emotional standpoint, it's like, it's, you know, I think the toughest thing emotionally is to accept where we are. And because our mindset says, no, I don't want to accept that there's a pandemic.
A lot of denial in there, isn't there?
There's denial. There's a huge amount of denial.
Right.
And all you do there is you're just wasting emotional energy by the bucket load. I mean, you're scratching the poison ivy. You know, it doesn't make it any better. It might feel good for a minute, but boy, it's going to make it worse. And so we get into, you know, these cycles, these ruminating cycles, where, you know, I joke about it, is a ruminant is a cow, and a cow chews its cud. And if we ruminate, what we do is we're just chewing on this bad stuff.
Yeah.
and especially the stuff that you're not going to be able to get rid of, is, you know, you're just in this death spiral. And there are several ways to get out of that. And one of the, you know, sort of most fundamental way is to actually sit back and put your rumination on trial, like you make a case in court. Okay. So, all right, right now I'm thinking about, you know, what a bummer it is that I can't get a shot, even though I qualify.
Right.
Okay. Well, does it make sense to think about that?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the downside there? You could die, or you could go on like you've been going on the last 6-8 months and get it when you get your turn. So is it helping you? Is it helping you? Are you figuring anything out? Are you moving the ball? Is it better to be ruminating about this?
Do you have any control over it? I mean, it just seems like there's so much that we worry about or complain about lately that it just is completely out of our control.
Amen. You know, life is out of our control. Okay. Right. And anybody who tells you otherwise, that's an illusion. Control is a complete illusion. You don't have to be a Zen Buddhist to believe that. You just need to look around.
Right.
Okay. I mean, in my personal case, it's a bit of a tragedy, but you know, like a day or so after New Year's this year, I got a phone call from the nursing home where my mother is. And they said, your mother is COVID positive.
Oh, dear.
And I said, oh, okay. You know what that means. But her vitals were good. The next day, her vitals were bad. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was talking to a nurse and she said, your mother's going to die of this. And I called my sister and I said, they're going to give us a half an hour to see. That's all we're going to get. Let's do it. And let's do it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we did. And she died the next day. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, now, you know, it's awful. I always thought I'd be there with my mother and, you know, all the other kind of stuff. Yada, yada, yada. I got to let that go. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have a choice. There was nothing else. I could agonize about that for a long, long time, but it's not going to change anything.
Right.
It's all out of my control and her control and the control of the people, you know, at the nursing home. It's life.
Yeah.
And so the struggle to be in control on things that you're not in control is awful. You know, there's that famous serenity prayer that everybody says, you know, I, you know, God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change things that I can and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom there.
Yeah.
And your ability to say, look, I don't agree with it. See, in America, we confuse acceptance and agreement. We think if we accept, we agree or like it. No. We don't, you know, I don't like that my mother died. Right. But I gotta accept it. And you know, the next three lines of that prayer, which everybody ignores, everybody thinks, well, that ends there. Reinhold Niebuhr, one of those four lines. No. From there it goes, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, and accepting, you know, challenges and, you know, as the pathway to peace. You know, accepting these little side roads that we get stuck on and we don't want to be stuck on, accepting the traffic, accepting, you know, all the stuff that we can't control. That's the pathway to peace. It's like
all part of the journey.
Really? Yeah. And from an energy standpoint, that's huge and very difficult for us to do.
Sure.
I'm not conditioned to do that. But that's
emotionally
one of the big tips.
There's one more, right? Is the S in pies, which is what?
Spiritual. Okay.
Spiritual.
Now, when I say spiritual, a lot of people think, oh, religious. Well, can be. For some people, it is. For some people, it's all, you know, God is an important part of their life, and for other people, not. Okay. But you can't get away from spiritual. Okay. Because that's who you really are, what's really going on inside. And you know, when I'm working with clients, I say, look, I'm a marketing guy, so we're not talking enlightenment here. You want enlightenment, go to Tibet for several years and sit in a cave and be quiet. And you know, it may work, it may not. Okay, that's enlightenment. But what I am talking about is you know, who are you really? Okay, you know, what really drives you? What gets you up in the morning? What's your identity? And the reason that's so powerful is the way we function normally in this country and maybe even in the world is we are sensate in terms of our culture. Mm-hmm. Begin with how do we feel? That's how we, you know, how do you feel? How you doing? You know, okay. So we begin with how do you feel? And then we act based on how we feel. And then our identity comes from that. Okay. So when I was growing up, back in the 60s, we had this phrase, if it feels good, do it. Not a good philosophy of life. But now we seem to have this phrase, if it feels bad, make it stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you begin with feelings and you're going to base your action on that, you're going to do things to try to make it stop, make this bad feeling stop. Right. And you know, that's when you get back to drugs and alcohol and too much sleep and overeating and all those other things that we know in the end. And then, you know, what's your identity? Well, my identity is, to pick one, I'm a junkie. Okay. So that all began with beginning with feelings. If you turn it around and you say, well, who are you really? And you spend some time thinking about that. You know, just to give you a pedestrian example again, my favorite sport, you know, I'm a long distance bike rider. Okay. So I start with that piece of my identity. Gotcha. And so, okay, so what do? I ride my bike. So that goes from identity to action and then come feelings. Well, how do you feel? Well, halfway through a 24-hour race, I'm feeling pretty tired. Okay. Yeah. But I don't identify with tired. Okay. Yeah. I identify with who I am.
With the bike. Okay? Yep.
So tired comes with the territory. You know, I gotta accept it. It's part of the sport. Right? Right. And that's kind of, and so flipping that, beginning with your identity, then thinking about how you act in line with your identity, who you are, and then think about, okay, given all that, how do I feel? Well, pretty crappy because COVID is really eating into my, you know, social time.
Right.
Yeah. You can accept that though. Comes with the territory.
Yeah. Yeah. Of those four, physical, intellectual, emotional, spiritual, is there one that provides us with more, you know, bang for our buck, so to speak? I mean, or are they all kind of playing together in balance?
So yeah.
Across the spectrum.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. If I were in Zen, I would say, you know, that's the wrong question to ask. But I'm not a Zen practitioner by any stretch. And I, and the spiritual one is the one. And uh-huh. Well, why is that? Well, really for the reasons you mentioned at the beginning, you know, the physical, intellectual, and emotional ones are pretty clear. I pretty much know when I run out of gas in those. Those are fairly limited, you know. But what the spiritual one is, it really not so clearly defined. You know, I don't wake up in the morning saying, well, I'm kind of out of spiritual energy.
Right.
Because most of us don't even think about it.
Right.
So the first thing is, well, what gives me spiritual energy? Well, in the broadest sense, what gets you out of bed in the morning? What do you love to do? What, you know, what floats your boat, to use all those old trite cliches. Why are you here? You know, what's your purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And what I think people who think about those things, and there's tons of books and all that other stuff out there on it, but people who think about those things tend to have a little more resilience.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Because if you're resting on that spiritual, again, for many people it'll be religious, but it doesn't have to be. But if you're resting on who you really are,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Why does Hillary climb the mountain? Because it's there.
Right.
Okay. Right. That's a spiritual answer. That, you know, he's going to go through a lot. You know, you go through a lot of physical discomfort and a lot of emotional and intellectual effort to get there. But the reason you're going up the mountain is because you're a mountaineer. That's what you do. That's
sure.
Who you are. That speaks to those values that are deep inside of you. And that's how you get through this stuff.
That's a very, very Simon Sinek-ish point of view there, right? People buy
favorites.
What you do, they buy why you do it. And
well, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
You know? And so, there's a lot of stuff that we've lost, you know, lives, health, but also convenience. You know, the tendency is to look back at all the things that we lost. But, you know, I have a friend who a little more spiritually based. I always joke with her and tell her she's my rabbi. And she says, you know, I look for what's precious in the difficulty. So, you know, so I have a challenge, I've got something that, you know, I'm lonely or something else, and I got to get through that. But there's something in there that's precious. There's something in there that's valuable. What is that? Okay. And that's really kind of a spiritual way of looking at it. We don't look at the positive stuff. Yeah. We tend to look at the negative stuff. When often good things are happening and we're just sort of letting that go by.
Right. Okay? Right. It's just a matter of, I was speaking with somebody else just recently. He's a photographer, kind of an amateur photographer. And he said, one of the things that he loves about it is that it forces him to take notice of the stuff that's around him, right? Mm-hmm. He's walking around all day long saying, what would make a good photo here today? Where so many of us are like heads down, looking at our screen or thinking about the next thing we got to do. He said his hobby kind of helps him connect more with the world around him. And I just kind of loved that analogy. And it sounds a little bit like what you're speaking to here.
Oh, absolutely. There's a brand new book out called Beholding Paradise, which is the photographs of Thomas Merton. Now, Thomas Merton died in 1968. I mean, he was a Trappist monk. He was a contemplative. He was a mystic. You know, he was a, you know, a priest. He wasn't a photographer. but what he did, somebody gave him an Instamatic. I mean, you remember those old cameras? I mean, you know, and after that, you know, kind of a relatively primitive single lens reflex camera. And he's taking these pictures. And if you look at the pictures, it's like, wow, what was he seeing in a root or in the side of an old building? But he was seeing things that we tend to take for granted that we don't really see. And if you spend a moment, you look at the picture and say, yeah, look at that.
Right
there in front of us. So you're a great metaphor. That's exactly what we're missing in all of this.
I know. Well, I'm kind of curious if there's, and I hate to, I mean, there's so much to dive into here, and I hate to kind of boil it down to this, but I'm going to anyway. If there's one thing that you think that, you know, we're all sitting here listening to this and saying to ourselves, well, okay, that's great, but where do I start? If there's one thing that we could start doing today that would help make a positive difference and bring us a little bit more closer to that balance that we're looking for, what do you think it would be?
Well, it's doing something for somebody else. I mean, you got to get out of taking care of, you have to take care of yourself, but you got to get out of that and also think about taking care of other people. Right. So, you know, one of the things that COVID did, in addition to taking my mother, is it took two of her cousins, my cousins, who were also pretty elderly. And so, you know, they were husband and wife, and I talked to their daughter, you know, a few times a week just to see how she's doing. You know, it doesn't cost any money, takes a little bit of time. You know, it's just, you know, I know she just lost her mother and her father 2 weeks apart. All right. So I'm going to talk with her, you know, listen to her, that type of thing, because it's just a nice thing to do, you know. And, you know, and I'm being selfish because it also makes me feel better to be able to do that. You know, are there charities that you could give to? Are there, you know, are there volunteer assignments that you can take that are COVID safe, you know, as there's stuff that can, you know, can just be nice to somebody instead of how you really feel about them. You know, one of the things that I've noticed driving around the Baltimore Beltway is that, you know, people are now all of a sudden driving 20 miles an hour faster than I thought they were before. It might be light traffic, but I think it also might be people are kind of, you know, like this. And so, hey, you know, allow an extra 5 minutes. Go 10 miles over the speed limit instead of 30 miles over the speed limit. Better for you, better for everybody else. So it's that consciousness of what can I do for other people they're hurting to. That to me is kind of the bottom line on all of it.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm terribly sorry to hear about your mother. I know a lot of folks are experiencing that feeling of loss right about now. And I'm kind of curious what has been helping for you as we've been going through all of this, in terms of finding that balance in your life? What have you been doing?
Well, you know, I try to find stuff every day that where I'm helping somebody. You know, I have several friends who have other problems, you know, cancer, taking care of an ailing spouse or something like that. And I try to reach out to them, talk to them, see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they reach out to me too. I mean, this morning I'm sitting there thinking about this and the phone rings. Here's a spiritual experience. And the phone rings and it's an old friend who's taking care of his wife who's dying of Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, he was just reaching out to see how I was doing. And I saw how he talked about how he was doing. And, you know, we talked actually a little bit about this discussion that we're having right here. And, you know, and this idea of every day is really precious, is really important, because he knows that his spouse is going to die in the not too, too distant future. Right. And, you know, he shared one thing. He said, you know, he said, she can't talk anymore, but she wrote me a note the other day that said, you know, she said to him, he said she felt sorry for me because I would have to go on and live without her. And, you know, and she meant that not in a selfish, nasty way,
right,
but
right.
You know, yeah, he's going to be one level more alone. And if you look at things like that, it's like, wow, you know, that was one of the nicest things that happened to me today, in addition to this right here, talking to you. Wow, you know, that, you know, he shared that story. That's really a good story. That's an inspiring story from somebody who's in a really, really tough spot, mm-hmm. much tougher than one I'm in or probably you're in, or a lot of the people who are watching this or listening to this. So this is, you know, it's like, wow, if he can find a bit of joy, a bit of peace, it helps me find my balance too, you know. Mm-hmm. My life is easier than his.
Sure, sure.
And I'm grateful for that.
Yes, me too. What's next on the road racing agenda? Is there much of that going on these days?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, they ran the Tour de France, but I wasn't in it.
Right.
And so, that's something that I really do miss. And I'm hoping that maybe we'll get some good long rides in or a race or two toward the end of the year after everybody gets vaccinated.
The vaccine. Yeah.
Right now, it's not worth taking the chance. Sure. So I just have to stay motivated to stay in shape. Not an easy thing to do.
Right.
So that's what it looks like this year.
There you go.
It'll be a good year.
Well, good luck with all that. And Greg, thanks so much for your time today. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you.
I got a lot out of it. Hope you did too. And let's do it again sometime soon. Thank you.
That'd be great. Thanks, Bill. You take care.
Wow. I needed that. I really did. I don't know about you, but great stuff there from Greg Condoracci. If you want to know more, check out his website. It's goodgroundconsulting.com. Greg's also written a great book about all of this. It's called Getting Up, Supercharging Your Personal Energy. It's available on Amazon. Order it today. Good stuff. And don't forget, this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. That's it, gang. Keep on keeping on, right? Keep that energy up, and we will talk to you soon. Have a great week.